old and only the regulations now. But as we say, better late than never. So, the committee secretary, any apologies?
Yes, Honorable Chair. There are two apologies. One is from Honorable Trete, who's away attending a Commonwealth Parliamentary Association in Sri Lanka until the 15th of September. Another one is from Honorable Makuba, who's also on a business a trip with the ICT committee. Those are the two apologies. Thanks.
Honorable Makuba is in Rome.
For 4 months, it should be a standing one. Okay.
It will just be repeated at every committee meeting that she's on maternity leave. But it's a standing apology. Yeah, it would be unfair for us to expect an apology every time. It's not fair. Honourable members, we have with us the delegation from the Department of Social Development and I think of the Minister's Office. Mr. Bakedi is here on behalf of the Director General. He said to me the Director General is out of the country. Okay, so if you could introduce the team and then we can start with a presentation. Members, a summary analysis of the regulations of the Prevention and Treatment of Substance Abuse Act has been circulated to you. I think it has been prepared by the researcher in the NCLP. But it is quite relevant, obviously, to what we are doing today. So I'm sure you all have received it. It's dated the 1st of June. But So, Mr. Bakedi, over to you.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, honorable members. My name is Xoxeko Phakade. I'm the CFO in the department. I'm acting Director General for today. I want to just verify whether the apology was received for both the Minister and Deputy Minister. They will be, I'm told they will be arriving slightly late because of an incident that happened at SAA. Okay. All right. Oh, I didn't get that. I was just informed when I came. Thanks. I think to make it quicker, I'll ask the colleagues from the department to quickly introduce themselves, starting from the presenters here in front of me. Connie.
Morning, honorable members. I'm Connie Ngumalo from Social Development, Chief Director responsible for social crime prevention and also substance abuse. Thank you.
Morning, honorable members. My name is Luyanda Mchochisa from Social Development, responsible for drafting legislation.
Morning, honorable members. I'm Mohoti Kalaya Modimo from the Department of Social Development, from the Directorate Substance Abuse and Central Drug Authority.
Good morning, I'm Pierre Verbius. I'm also from the Department of Social Development, Directorate Substance Abuse.
Good morning, my name is... Good morning, my name is Pusele Tolosela from the Department of Social Development Legal Services.
The Minister's Advisor. Thank you very much.
Good morning.
Good morning, Zain Dango, Special Advisor to the Minister.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Kim Malek from Social Development, responsible for indeed support. Thank you.
That's it, Chair.
Chairperson, we are going to receive the presentation from the colleagues in front of me, Connie Mumalo and our legal guru. Over to you quickly.
Ask members to switch off the phones and our guests because it's having an impact on the microphone system. So every time your phone rings, even if it's on silent, it interferes. So also, you know that our proceedings are being recorded, so it's going to interfere with the quality of the recording.
Good morning once again, colleagues. Honorable Chairperson, members of the committee, I greet you this morning. Once again, my name is Luyanda Mchoshesa, as indicated before. Today, the purpose of the presentation is to brief the committee on the development of regulations in terms of the Prevention of and Treatment for Substance Abuse Act 2008, and also to request the committee to make comments on the proposed regulations and also ask the committee to support the Minister of Social Development on the development of these regulations. The progress so far in terms of these regulations is that the regulations were consulted with the Central Drug Authority, the Provincial Department of Social Development, National Development Departments that the Act requires to be consulted, which include the basic education, health, higher education and training, correctional services, COGTA, women and children and people with disabilities, arts and culture, sports and recreation, the Medicines Control Council and the National Youth Commission, that is the NYDA. And to also indicate that professional provincial departments of all the above mentioned departments have also been consulted, the civil society organizations included. The comments have been received for these regulations and were scrutinized and incorporated into the regulations where necessary. You must also indicate that the regulations have been published for comments on 9 March 2012 in the Extraordinary Gazette, and comments were received to that effect, and we dealt with the comments. Just to give a brief view of why the regulations, the Act, that is Act number 70 of 2008, that was signed by the President in 2008, but the Act itself is not in force yet, pending the finalization of these regulations. The Act, as indicated, was passed by Parliament on 24 June 2008. It was also assented to in 2009 in April. Section 65 of the Act, that is the Prevention of and Treatment for Substance Abuse Act, requires the Minister of Social Development to make regulations. Hence the presentation on the regulations today. The Act itself will only be implemented once the regulations have been finalized, because the bulk of the provisions in the Act itself require regulations in order for the Act to be implemented. Preparations are already underway for the proclamation on the of the Act, and the date that has been identified for the proclamation of the Act is 1 October 2012. The regulations themselves, once after the brief summary regarding the history thereof, that is of the Act, the regulations deal with the minimum norms and standards. And the minimum norms and standards that relate to prevention services in terms of its regulation 3. Just to highlight a few, although there is more, that for the purposes of this particular presentation, it would be important to just mention those that we can manage for now. They focus on the issues of accessibility of the services, that is substance abuse services, the availability to individuals and families, the issue of linking the individuals and the families with resources, also aim at creation of developmental opportunities. The issue of discouraging experimental use is also addressed in the regulations themselves. The issue of educating and raising awareness about substance abuse. Minimum norms and standards also aim at the building of capacity of individuals that are likely to be affected by substance abuse. Also, promote the healthy lifestyles of the individuals and families, and also promote abstinence from the use of substances altogether. Chapter 2 also deals with the programs that give effect to early intervention services. Early intervention services focus on preventing harm from progressing, screening of the individuals that are affected by substance abuse, motivating individuals or families to be involved in intensive treatment, facilitating admission to intervention programs. Still in chapter two of the Act, the Act with the regulations deal with the protection of children and service users in treatment centers. A number of issues have been identified in the regulations of how the treatment, the protection of children and service users can be taken care of in terms of the regulations. That is, the treatment centers and halfway houses must ensure that there is protection of children and service users against all forms of ill treatment by any person, issues of discomfort and favorable weather conditions, and this has come from the understanding that in some treatment centers you find out that in the middle of winter there are no blankets and service users or have one light blanket and all that. So that's what that relates to. The sharing of personal resources, that is, the treatment centers must ensure that each and every service user has his or her own resources to use. The issue of unhygienic premises must also be taken care of. And the abuse of corrective measures. It has been indicated that in some treatment centers and halfway houses, service users would be denied food or medication as a form of punishment. So this particular regulation looks at correcting that. The issue of the risk of fire, we have seen many children's home or old age homes burning into ashes and all that. So this has also been taken off care of in terms of these regulations so that children are protected from similar misfortunes. And unfavorable. Thanks, Jefferson. The issue of malnutrition and starvation. Has already been indicated that in some treatment centers you understand that service users are denied food as a form of punishment. Illnesses and diseases, how do they have to take into account that some of the service users have also other sicknesses that may affect other service users, so the environment must be conducive for taking care of such issues. Against attack, robbery, and assault by any person, hazardous objects and hazardous buildings, the regulations introduce a system where a structure has to be approved by the relevant authorities in consultation with the department, to see that this kind of an environment is where service users can be accommodated and not be any kind of an environment as is the case today. There is also the issue of the risk of missing of academic activities that needs to be taken care of in relation to children who may miss school and be in the treatment centers, as to how do we begin to take care of their homeworks and their studies so that they are not left behind? If arrangements can be made between the treatment centers and the schools to say homeworks can be done in the treatment centers or halfway houses and they can be delivered to school, or teachers or can come from school and go to the treatment center and see if they can offer some services. This has also been included in the regulations. And also the issue of any form of violation of rights of children and service users must also be taken care of, and the issue of relapse. How do we create an environment in the treatment centers where the issue of relapse cannot ensue, like not exposing service users to medication that can be turned around and used as substances, use of Disprin and Coca-Cola and all that to create some more drugs. Chapter 3 deals with the manner in, for entering into contracts with service providers. The Act requires that the minister must make regulations of how service providers have to enter into contracts in order to source funding to provide substance abuse related services. So regulations spell out that this is how, but this is in line with the financial governance policy in the department of how the minister has to deal with that. And the conditions for receiving of financial assistance, that is the service user has, the service provider has to apply for financial assistance and has to be registered in terms of the Act, that is the Prevention of and the Treatment for Substance Abuse Act, and also comply with the accounting measures for the purposes of getting or complying with the financial assistance contract that has been entered into. And then the remedies for the non-compliance, so what the minister may do if there is non-compliance. The regulations spell out what must happen and what must also happen to service. If the minister decides to cancel the contract or at the same time decides to close down the center, what must happen to the service users who are in the treatment center itself or in the halfway house? There is also that in terms of the regulations. The norms and standards in terms of Chapter 4 of the regulations, norms and standards for community-based services, as we also indicated in terms of Chapter 2, the norms and standards for treatment centers and halfway houses. So the services that are rendered by community-based organizations that relate to prevention and early intervention services will have to comply with the minimum norms and standards that are there for treatment centers and halfway houses in as far as they are similar, that is the prevention and early intervention services. The conditions for registration, Chapter 5, conditions for registration of community-based services. Community-based services, you will understand that in terms of the Act, the community-based services have to be registered in order to be provided by the service providers. So the service provider has to apply to the HOD in order to have the community-based services registered, and then thereafter they can be rendered in the community. So the HOD has got the power to approve the application or to decline the application or grant temporary registration if he or she is in the opinion that at least there is a possibility for compliance, but one or two things are still outstanding. The guidelines for the functioning of community-based services in terms of Chapter 7, that is the community-based organizations have to have a management structure in order to ensure that there is smooth running of the organization itself and the provision of services in terms of the Act. And the management structure itself must be able to terminate developed policies, promote national norms and standards, provide oversight and direction of the organization, and also meet once a quarter in order for the department to be able to have access to quarterly reports when they go and monitor these organizations. And they also have to monitor, review, and approve the operational plan. Chapter 8 and 9 deal with the requirements and conditions for registration of treatment centers and halfway houses. Norms and standards that deal with the norms and standards that are required in terms of the treatment centers and halfway houses have to be complied with as a condition for one to be able to render services in a treatment center or halfway house. It's the same requirement as in the community-based services, that is, there is a need to comply with norms and standards and also comply with any other information that is required by the department in terms of the form that is also prescribed according to these regulations. Chapter 10 of the regulations deals with the appeals against certain decisions of the Director General. Sometimes the Director General may decline an application for registration of a treatment center or halfway house, and the applicant has got a recourse to say, I can appeal to the minister to set aside the decision of the Director General or something like that if the application has been declined. So Chapter 10 deals with how that has to be taken care of. Chapter 12 deals with integrated aftercare and reintegration services. How the reintegration and integrated aftercare must be dealt with, and it must also be known that it should focus on the provision of the life skills to health service users to maintain sobriety. Also provide professional support and assist in the reduction of conditions which may lead to relapse, promotion of a healthy lifestyle, and improving the well-being of families. Chapter 15 deals with the transfer and retransfer of persons from prison to public treatment centers from child care centers to public public treatment centers, alternative care centers, and all that. So the administrative side of it, of how the transfer and retransfer has to take place, is also dealt with in terms of these regulations. Chapter 15 deals with the issue of actually continuation of how these transfer and retransfer has to take place, who has to do what in terms of security measures as well, because others may be transferred from prison to treatment centers and all that. So basically that is all what these regulations provide, but it's not an exhaustive catalog of what these regulations provide for. It's just the key issues that I have identified. The copies have been distributed to get to the fine details of what the regulations actually provide for at the end of the day. So we actually asked the Portfolio Committee to take note of the development of these regulations and give comments to assist the further processing of these regulations towards promulgation, and also support the Minister of Social Development on the development of these regulations. Basically, that's that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other remarks from the department side? Thank you. Honourable members, I'm going to open the floor now for questions. Just on page 4 of 104, the termination or withdrawal of registration of community-based services by the HOD. Should it be DG or HOD?
Community-based services.
Yeah.
HOD.
Okay. That will be referred to the province.
The province.
Yes, sir. I don't have the act with me, but could you define professional staff for me in your presentation? I think you said in a professional, you refer to in a professional staff or but somehow, somewhere, I just lost the page. The provision of professional support. There was one institution that was very much in the news, Nelport, and there was criticism against Nelport that they did not have qualified personnel assisting with substance abuse. Is that, I don't have the act in front of me, that's why I'm asking you, is that void, is it accommodated in the act, and also in terms of the regulation, is it also defined? So is it defined in the act, and in the I don't expect it to be defined in the regulations, but it should be more clear.
It
made more clear.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the one question. The second question I want to ask you is, what remedies are there just on the closure of institutions, especially if you had if there's death of patients, negligence, and so on. I just don't get the issue that it's coming out clear in the regulations. Shouldn't the regulations also speak to it? I don't want to sound as if we just have to punish and not correct, because I do see that the regulations are very clear in terms of community-based support programs and so on and so on. But just those issues, because it has been dominating the public arena for quite some time. What remedies are there for the department and the minister? Because, I mean, frankly, we've been toothless up to now in dealing with those issues. Honourable members, any other questions? Honourable Waters?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. As far as the enforcement of the Act and the regulations are concerned, you're obviously going to need people to inspect facilities. How big is this inspectorate? Can you unpack that for us? Who forms part of this inspectorate? How often? You talked about a quarterly report, but I doubt facilities will be inspected every quarter. So could you give us an indication as to the frequency of the inspections at all facilities? Then also, obviously, I mean, I had left social development when this particular bill came to the committee. I'd moved to health by then. Could you give us some indication for the members' interests what the costing implications are for this? Because the costing must have been done for this bill. And since it's going to be enforced, or hopefully enforced from the 1st of October, what budget, what plans have you made with regards to additional funding for this act? Because I can assume it's going to take more funding than the current act. So additional funding is going to be given to ensure this act is implemented. And then also, can you also give us some indication about the additional funding for, you talked about community-based services, treatment centres, aftercare and reintegration, which is vitally important. I mean, if you can just talk about treatment centres, for example, there aren't any in Limpopo. I mean, just as an example, I mean, there's not many around the whole country, and I'm sure we could do with more, but the fact is, what funding mechanism has been approved to ensure there's an expansion of treatment centres? And then aftercare and reintegration as well, I'd like to know particularly about that, because that's vitally important so people don't relapse and start using substances again. Because we've hopefully they've gone through the program, we've spent a lot of money on rehabilitation, so we don't want them to relapse. So what's the program as far as the rollout of aftercare facilities and reintegration facilities around the country? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. Mine is just a small question that when you do an appeal, because if the DG, you are saying if the DG have declined your application, you can make an appeal to the minister. So what I want to know is the time frame, how long it's going to take the minister to consider your appeal. Thanks, Chair. There are various departments that has been mentioned here that the Act requires them to be part to be consulted. Of which I think that has been done. I just want to check, as it has been already mentioned, that there are comments that have been received from these departments. Just want to find out the response from these various departments. How does those departments respond to, in order for them to participate effectively? Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is on the department that are going to be involved, particularly the Department of Education. I understand when it was presented, it was indicated that there'll be teachers visiting the centers to assist these kids that are in the centers. So is there any particular school that has been identified that the teachers from this school will be the ones that will be helping these kids in the centers? Because in my understanding, these kids will be from different schools and there'll be one center. So how is it going to be done? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member Malule. Honorable Bula.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the media, I think, in KZN, the sudden death of this activist, you know, the 23-year-old, where you find that there's an easy circulation of cocaine in clubs, etc. And over the weekend in Durban, a 23-year-old activist passed away. But also, you know, Chairperson, it went on to indicate that these drugs are quite easily obtainable in clubs. Now, I think the legislation is long overdue to tighten up certain aspects. Chair, but I think that you raised the concern, and I just want to take it a little further in terms of the professional staff, the psychiatrists and the full-time 24-hour nurses, etc. Chair, if you could recall, we went on an oversight in KwaZulu-Natal, and some of these centers were very, very much dilapidated, you know, and it all revolves around value for money. We have the very good pieces of legislation that will speak to the challenges and the issue around the budget constraints. You know, what is the oversight in terms of certain pieces of legislation giving a directive to deliver a certain particular purpose? Yet that center does not have a fully fledged component of all the aspects, firstly. Secondly, Chair, if you could unpack perhaps, you know, when you work in communities, you have these problems where young people, youth, are saying that these negative impediments, where you have to go through a long process of going through social workers and all of that in order to be enrolled in a center. How can that be fast-tracked to assist the youth? Lastly, legislation give over those youth that are sent to the courts on a committal basis rather than analyzing and evaluating the challenges through the social development? How does the courts get involved with regards to the committal part of it? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Any other member? Yes, we visited that center that Honorable Bula has referred to, and the committee's report will probably come into Parliament around that. We haven't finalized the report, but the one substance abuse center we visited were quite dilapidated. All of them seeming in terms of it's a state-run institution. In terms of the, I think in terms of the staff commitment, there was nothing wrong with that, but and the professionalism of the staff, but the state of the building in Chatsworth was horrible, and you had one big ward where even grown-ups and minors were mixed up together. So how does our the regulation also provide that minors and even young adults are kept separate from your more mature patients? They were just in one big ward, huge one, not twice the size of it, and everyone just had a bed. And then you had broken windows, so you know that in terms of broken windows, those things happen. But the fact that it was winter and the windows were broken, that was just definitely not on. So in terms of maintenance, there was definitely a problem, which also impacted on those issues raised in terms of the kind of discomfort and unfavorable weather conditions that people suffer, that they should also be comfortable in their home environment. There should be a secure environment for them. Okay. Can you please respond to the question?
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Before we start, let me welcome the Honorable Minister. We got your apology that you were arriving late, but welcome to the Victoria Committee meeting. I'm sure you would also like to comment later on, so then I'll give you over to you to conclude, Honorable Minister. Yeah, now she's going to start and then you can conclude.
Thank you. I will start, and my legal colleagues will also deal with other legal issues that have been asked. Firstly, the issue of professionals. The Act and the regulations are clear in terms of the professionals that are required to run a treatment facility. It's a social worker, it's a must, and a nurse. The other professionals, we say they need to be full-time, but the others, we say they can be sessional, but they have to be there. So a treatment center won't be registered if there's no proof or indication that you've got a full-time social worker, a full-time nurse, and a sessional doctor, and a sessional psychiatrist, so that they visit the center. So that's one area where it's going to be a condition for registration. And the second question was around the remedies on the closure of institutions if there's a death of a patient. I think the legal colleagues will assist us on that one. The third one is the enforcement of the Act itself and the regulations, the frequency thereof. In terms of response, we don't have an inspectorate currently in the department to be doing the inspection. What we use our own social workers, our own staff within the department to do the monitoring and the inspection when we want to do registration and thereafter monitor on a quarterly basis. We have discovered that due to shortages of social workers, we are also training our own social auxiliary workers so that they can assist social workers because they are readily available in communities to do monitoring in these facilities. Currently, we're not using them because they are not experienced, but we're busy training them so that they can assist our social workers. However, Chairperson, I can indicate that the issue of inspectorate is something we're also exploring, because it's not only for treatment centers, even other facilities within the department. It's something that we're thinking that maybe if we can create an inspectorate, then we can have components that can deal with different programs within. But currently we don't have inspectorate. We're using our own staff, which is still a challenge. The cost implications, this legislation was costed around 2007, and funds were allocated by Treasury to all the provinces and also national. Unfortunately, Chairperson, I didn't bring the figures with me, but we do have a costing report which can be made available to the committee. And that allocation then was for specifically to also build treatment centers. I know there were two, three provinces that were allocated funds at that point. One was Northern Cape, where they were supposed to build a treatment facility, but it was never built because of money was taken to in the province to do other things. But I'm happy to say in Limpopo, they are almost finished with their treatment center. That's one province also where they didn't have treatment center. So last year also, in preparation for the implementation of this legislation this year, because we were saying to Treasury, things have changed and the problem has grown, we're requesting for more funds. Then we could not get additional funds in terms of adding or topping up what they've allocated then in 2007. But we won't relax, we'll still continue, because they said provinces are underspending. So if you come and say we need more money to implement this legislation, we did allocate money. So that's the challenge we've got. But what we have done in terms of readiness, we have come up with an implementation plan for each and every province to say, now that the legislation is going to be implemented come 1 October, what is it that we're going to afford in terms of the availability of budget? So that plan also will be made available to the committee. We did not bring it because we thought today we're going to talk regulations, but it can be made available to the committee, even for national departments, because they have an impact in terms of implementing the legislation. There are other things that social development cannot do alone. If, for instance, justice doesn't come on board in terms of the role that is supposed to play in comitas, there's no way that social development can achieve or make progress in terms of implementation. So that particular plan is also available. It can be made available to the committee. Aftercare and reintegration, it's one priority program that we prioritize, including treatment and prevention, because we believe that you can treat, but if you don't provide aftercare and reintegration programs and you don't strengthen it, then it's like you haven't done anything, because treatment without aftercare and reintegration, it's not working. So what we have done, we've put aftercare and reintegration as components of treatment, so that each and every treatment program in it, it should have aftercare and reintegration. We even came up with a model on how to guide service providers, and also social workers on how to provide the aftercare and reintegration services in communities. Admission criteria for the youth. Yes, we agree with the current legislation, the process is so tedious. In fact, families were even opting to use private facilities because it's quicker to be admitted when you go through that route. So we have shortened or streamlined the admission criteria so that within 24 hours you are admitted to a facility for you to access treatment. What we have also done, we came up with a criteria that says if you are a young person, you are not supposed to be mixed with an adult. So the center that honorable members visited, it needs to be reviewed, because if they are mixing children with adults, in terms of this new legislation, that is not accepted. Children should have their own separate facility. Even if it's in the same premises, they need to have their own facility and also undergo their own program, because in some facility, it's one size fits all. So what we have come up with is a treatment program that is specifically for young people, so that they are subjected to their own treatment that is in line with their needs and their developmental needs. Yes, we can agree state facilities across board, not only substance abuse, they are not in a good state, more especially on the maintenance part. In the department, we do have an infrastructure program where we came up with the blueprints for each and every program facility. For instance, your secure care, your treatment centers, older persons, and so on. And we also came up with a prototype to say, moving forward, if you want to build a treatment center, this is the guidance in terms of the type of building. However, the issue of maintenance for the state facilities is still a challenge, but it's being looked at in the department because it was sparked more especially by the older person's facilities, which were burning, and then an audit was done. So it's one thing that the department is also attending. Currently, yes, we can agree and acknowledge that most of the state facilities are not in a good state in terms of maintenance. We have challenges with the public works where you have outsourced the facility. It's managed better than where the department is managing in terms of maintenance. Yeah. Thank you. I think I'll hand over to my colleagues from the legal section to deal with the issues that have legal implications.
Thank you, Chair. I think the first question relates to the remedies available to the department in case of negligence or where there's death in a treatment center. Generally, what the department can do is to, this is what happens, you conduct an investigation which is provided for in the Act, and based on the outcome and the recommendations of the investigation, you can either close the center or this is what is likely to happen. But where the criminal conduct, for example, you can lay charges with the police. And this is, and generally when someone has passed away at a treatment center, the police will then have to get involved. An investigation will have to be conducted. And if, in fact, someone is found to have committed a criminal offense, then they'll be charged for that criminal offense. But I think also some of the remedies could be actually be available to the parents or the relatives of the people who are brought to the center. For example, if there was negligence, they could also be sued for their negligent conduct. If there was loss of life or any injury sustained. I think the other part was relates to the whether or not there's other pieces of legislation that will take precedence over this one in relation to commitment of people to facilities. Well, I think there could be a conflict of which law takes precedence, but this one is specific about the fact that in instances where a person may have been found guilty of abusing drugs, you may, instead of committing that person to a correctional facility, rather commit that person to a treatment center. But there are certain procedures that you must take into account. Whether or not, in fact, if you refer this person to a treatment center, is that the right center to which you are supposed to be referring this person? Or is this person best suited for a correctional facility? So you look at those things, and there will be a report accompanying such a decision. There was a question relating to the time frame within which the minister must consider an appeal against the decision of the minister. Now, the Act makes specific reference to it's 90 days because, remember, the whole administrative decisions are in the main regulated by PAJA. So the 90 days that is prescribed in terms of this Act and the regulation flows from the provision of PAJA. But we tend to misread the 90 days as if it means you must wait until the last day and then consider the appeal. But it's actually within 90 days. If you can do it in 20 days, it's fine, but the maximum period within which it must be done is 90 days. If I may just go back to the committal, sections 35 and 36 also, the specific provisions that deal with the committal of a person to a treatment center. Thank you, Sean.
I think there is also a question around the issue of teachers being available in the treatment centers and halfway houses to assist their children. This particular provision is there in the regulations to say
yes, it has been identified that there is a need for children not to miss their classes that academically whilst they are in the treatment centers and all that. That has to be dealt with in terms of Section 5 of the Act, which deals with the intersectoral strategies that still need to be developed or are in the process of being developed to indicate how that should be exercised. There is no clear-cut indication for now to say so many teachers must be present in the treatment center and all that, but there is just an indication to say we need to address that particular situation when the strategies are being developed.
Are there any members that would like to have a second round of questions? Honorable Bula.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. It's just that I hear the last speaker in regard to educators in the centers. And I'm referring to the one specifically we visited again in KZN in Newlands. And I think this particular section, I think myself and Mom Kiza was there, where we had these young ladies, you know, they were so enthusiastic to get involved with the craft work and skills development. But the constraints was that you could not have the facilities. So is there, while you speak about educators, what is the thinking that we should have a fully fledged, confined department to deal with skills, so that when you deal with reintegration, you know, you have some sort of certification that can also address the issue of job creation?
I'm sure you can know, you should link, we should link that with the treatment duration and maybe your aftercare service. Okay. Yes, I'm going to give over the department and the minister just to conclude first after that response.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Just to say the issue of skills development in the treatment centers or halfway houses is actually different from this particular provision in terms of what needs to be done. The what is envisaged in this provision is more to say if, say, a student who is going to write matric exams at the end of the year happens to be in a treatment center around June, July or something like that, what can be done in terms of ensuring that this, the student is not left behind. The portfolio of evidence that needs to be taken to the Department of Education gets to the Department of Education. Tests and assignments and all that are written for the purposes of ensuring that the student will, at the end of the day, in October, November, be able to write exams. So it is a separate process from the issue of skills development that has to take place in the treatment center.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to be very brief. I think the issue of guidelines or regulations depends more on the value chain that you need to strengthen, from a committal to admissions, the treatment, aftercare, and then monitoring. And I think our side is monitoring, and we are very weak when it comes to monitoring. As a follow-up, I think we'll have to visit the Newlands, is it Newlands and Chatsworth, visit those centers so that we can come back, sit, and see how we deal with the challenges that are in those center, in those centers. I was just thinking that it's a pity that when you try to focus on something, something else crops up, and you need also to move with speed to deal with the challenges Miss Mumalo mentioned the issue of older persons, and this year we focused on facilities for older persons and children, and everyone was up to scratch because they knew that we were coming to look into such. I want to commit that we're going to visit not in KwaZulu-Natal only, but just going to visit throughout the country and see how we strengthen our monitoring. Yes, I raised the issue of having an inspectorate that is going to look into facilities. But if our monitoring is not strong, the inspectorate won't also do anything. We need to have a very strong monitoring arm. So I think after our visit, we'll come back to the portfolio committee and say these are the issues we found out, and this is how we think we're going to deal with them. But one other challenge that is facing us, it's facing all the departments. It's not social development only. But with us, when there is a haircut, the first department that gets affected is social development. And the reason today most of the social workers have not been employed is because of the haircut. And that provinces were all given money to employ young social workers, recruit them. But the money has been taken to other projects. So it's a problem that we are trying to deal with. And yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson.
I've even had a second round and I'll ask if there's any questions. Why don't you speak to the minister after the meeting? So I'm going to close the meeting. Thank you very much, honourable members, honourable minister. And